So we are now presenting the works or different forms of works of Tagore Tonopah. Michelle will later talk about the analytical part of Tagore Tonopah. My task is to present its productive traces. Both of us will split our presentation into two parts. We will talk about our tools, our ways of working, methods, etc. And we will present certain excursuses mentioning where we can see connections or reference to see the parts work. I will now start the excursus about production with a quote from Lucy Lepard in 1979. Quote, "In a period where everybody had better be thinking quick about what to do next about the world, art has been backed into a corner where artists are allowed not to think. This taboo effectively keeps artists out of the way and at the same time allows the present single class buying art audience to mold it and its uses." What I found crucial about this quote is that it has precisely defined how capitalism works in respect to public relations.
Hi, just a little second. I'm sorry, just a little second.
Away?
From the microphone.
Excuse me. Away. So what I find crucial about, so was it not understandable at all? Is it better like this?
Yeah.
Did you understand anything, or was it just... Shall I start with a quote again? Okay. So I'll start with a quote again. So Lucy Lippitt said, "In a period where everybody had better be thinking quick about what to do next about the world, art has backed into a corner where artists are allowed not to think. This taboo effectively keeps artists out of the way and at the same time allows the present single class buying art audience to mold it and its uses." What I find crucial about this quote is that it does precisely define how capitalism works in respect to public relations, or, to use a term which is closer to the art context, mediation. Capitalism does not openly forbid thinking, or censors thinking via laws. Even if the effects are similar, its methods are more subtle and work differently. Capitalism uses the so-called freedom to prevent freedom from happening. Capitalism allows people to be infantile and regressive because it creates conditions in which time always is short, whereas spontaneous actions and being up to date are promoted as unquestioned qualities. By this, it does not forbid, but tries to make long-term projects impossible to work on. I do not want to get into a philosophical discourse about the question, what is thinking here? Other people did. I just want to suggest two sentences in respect to Lippitt's thesis. First, thinking needs time. And second, thinking is a long-term project. Without time, thinking becomes stressful, unattractive, and often extremely undesirable. But it's the underlying conditions that make it like that. To put it a little more sentimentally, thinking in itself is, on the contrary, an extremely desirable or joyful form of action. So allowing not to think means working with a widespread and infantile impulse that reacts to the real experience of thinking being stressful and exhausting. What really is stressful is the fight for the time, which allows thinking processes to happen. And what is frustrating is the fact that you normally do not get any credit for being thoughtful. Allowing not to think, in that sense, has the touch of generous giving, a much-needed release from tension you face if you start to question, analyze, or criticize. But thinking, from my point of view, is, if it isn't the basis of practice, is at least a condition for developing one. And I have to stress here that I'm not talking about thinking as a long-term project in the matters of lifelong learning or something like that. So, in the art world, we now have the situation that certain tools are privileged. Some of these I could mention here. These tools are, for example, painting, inspiration, creativity, narration, gossip, irritation, beamers, and to use the term of Jean-Claude Monod, confusion. The art market is now in a phase where its absurdity is obvious to many of us, even to its own defenders. The success in art market is not only due to the power of money, which is based on the appropriation of collective wealth. The success is also propped up by a discourse which shouldn't be underestimated. Working in the art means taking symbolic production seriously. Apart from my activities for Target Tonopop, I'm currently finishing a book trying to problematize the role of history in art mediation. To put it simply, I'm interested in the operations which are applied to keep an old-fashioned notion of art alive and at the same time suppress notions and practices of art which are not only critical to the status quo but also offer alternatives. All of us experience it daily. One is permanently confronted with this TINA doctrine. There is no alternative to capitalism. This means two things. First, everything is working as best as it can be expected. And second, any other concept of an economy or social organization is dead to failure, has no chance, is hopeless. At this point, I would like to briefly present you some results of my research concerning the histories of the avant-gardes. I'm interested in a method which allows one to reconstruct avant-garde history using a methodological approach developed by Pierre Bourdieu's double historization. The double historization approach has two steps. First, reconstructing the different historical actors as a field of relations between voices, practices, and the general conditions of their time. And secondly, examining the history of how these practices are interpreted in different times. I would like to present you a very short sample of this second historization using the famous German art theorist Peter Bürger as a prototype. In the late 70s, Peter Bürger wrote a very influential theory on the avant-gardes. He gives me the chance to show how, through his narration and ideological operations, those traces of the avant-gardes, which were highly productive in changing art as a system, were later effectively erased from official history. So I just present five operations he used to write the history of the avant-gardes. First operation, generalization. Bürger generalizes the intentions of the avant-gardes, like Bauhaus, Dada, Russian constructivism, expressionism, surrealism. He generalizes all of them by mixing their various intentions into a single one, characterized by, first, Aufhebung of the institutions, which means overcoming of the institutions, and second, connecting art and life. Second, operation misreading. Bürger basically uses no direct quotes from artists, but works with formula to characterize their intentions. He also transfers what he understood from surrealism and Dada to every avant-garde movement, so that all avant-gardes turn out to have been impulsive, radical, and provocative. Third, neglect. Bürger leaves out any political and artistic practice which worked on and actually realized changes. Changes in the convention of art distribution and education, changes of the social and economic rules governing collective activity, changes in the artist's role in society, changes of the status and function of the art object and work of art. So he all neglects that. Fourth operation, redefinition. By giving us an imprecise and factually wrong story, Bürger defines all efforts of the avant-garde as failure. But even more, he implicitly attributes this failure to the idealistic, inconcrete, and hopelessly unrealistic approaches and attitudes of the avant-garde in general. Fifth, finalization. Bürger buries all the avant-gardistic practices and efforts and changes as historically overcome. And he concludes that everybody who tries to restart or actualize that history has no chance because the bourgeois institutions have won the fight and carried the day. So this is just to, you know, give you some short idea of how that theory worked. And now we wanted to present you some of the practices of targeted Honnepop. I start with two of them, and then later on Michel goes on with some more. So the first two I'll just very shortly present is the open mic. The open mic is a series of discussions which has happened now four times, and it always happens in the beginning of the year in January. And it's always in the first two, you know, weeks of January, where we invite people to come to a small place in Hamburg. It's always the same place, and it's always the same three people who are the hosts, which is Michel Chevalier, Tobias Still, who is not here today, and myself. And it works like this. We present and invite with a little card where you have the topics of the day, which are like topics which are mostly critical to the art context, sometimes referring to cultural events which are happening in town, in Hamburg, you know, the actual politics, for example, or like mean little notes, sometimes humorous commentaries, whatever. And this list is kind of, as an invitation, spread and then hung on the wall when we start to discuss.
It's a non-binding list of themes, so it's non-binding.
That's true. Yeah. So it's just a list. It's an offer. You know. This is just the entrance of this place where we present this stuff, which you are going to comment on later on. Well, this is the open mic. Obviously, the open mic is a form or a format which we took from the European Social Forums. It is, well, the function is that the mic is at the middle of the room and there's nobody who's privileged. Everybody can take it, but can't take longer than 3 minutes. And then it is just a chain of comments, of people referring to these topics, you know, trying to get into the discussion, and we are normally not trying to interfere so much, which is not only working. So then we always have some presentation of other works which are produced in the context of Target Tonopop, because there are different tools, so we try to combine this. And then Michel is very effective with quotes of theory and art history, so he always prepares some quotes, and if it, you know, fits in the discussions, we hung them up and discuss about them, just, you know, to get another idea or another angle of what is talked about. That you can see there, that, you know, people are invited to make marks and to note or to comment on the topics. Okay, the second format is unlimited liability. This is a bigger project which has happened now 3 times, and it is basically initiative of Michel Chevalier. It is happening in this place. It is a small, like a flat in a cellar, or a souterrain, I think you call this. And if you go inside, it looks pretty strange. First of all, what is striking are the wallpapers, and secondly, there are all these different objects hanging around. These are objects Michel sells in this shop. It is a shop. And he's selling them objects or CDs, well, art objects, CDs, posters, photography,
publication,
videos, food, all kinds of things. And before that, he invited artists or editioners or musicians to give him these things or produce these things for this shop. There are certain rules to it. One rule is nothing can be more expensive than 30 euros. And the other production mode is it has to be a multiple.
Yeah, multiple, and no drawings.
And no drawings, and no paintings.
They're excluded. And the contract.
Right, I'm coming to that. And then, then you have all these different kinds of stuff, and then there are events going on, like music, concerts, presentations, and so on. It's a very weird place. It's a little bit, because of the environment, it's very strange, and then you have all the stuff there. And the most maybe interesting part, or conceptually most interesting part, is that the buying process is different from others, because the concept of this shop is that nobody who has more than 50,000 euros in assets can buy there. So for that, Michel worked on a contract which makes sure that this doesn't happen. So only people who have less than 50,000 euros on their account or, you know, wherever, can buy there. Any other people can come into the shop, they can look at things, but they are not allowed to buy. So the rules are obviously just turns around. Normally we can look, but can't buy, and this time it's the other way around. So this is the buying process, which is pretty long, of course, because you have to sign, and make sure that you are a reliable person in this context. Okay, I think I'm ready.
You can show the contract.
Ah, okay. This is a contract.
You can leave that on.
Okay.